It takes a hero to admit that he's the Dom DeLuise to the Burt Reynolds.
Yeah.
No one is going to get the Smoking the Bandit reference.
Smoking the Bandit is a reference that zero people that listen to our podcast will understand.
What the fuck is this guy talking about? Who's Dom?
Welcome to Rated NA, the podcast for the website nerdappropriate.com, and this is episode number 291, and it's also still special because we're still sitting directly in front of each other.
Yay! I'm Ash, by the way.
I'm Matt. Oh, yeah. Did we say that last time?
I don't think we did, but it's okay.
I don't know. I'm sleepy.
Yeah, it's okay. So yeah, we are once again here, very close to where Nerd Appropriate was born, and it's on our 7th anniversary. Unfortunately, Scott isn't here. We can kind of say where Scott is.
I think we can fully say where Scott is.
Let's
now,
do
can't
it.
We?
Let's expose him. Let's fully expose him.
We'll say
him.
It, and then if he's all mad about it when he edits it, he'll just cut this out.
Yeah, that sounds good. He can put a beep over it or something.
So if you follow along on social media of either me or Scott, you probably saw weirdness for a little while and then like weird radio silence from Scott's part. But he got a job. We'll leave out who. How's that? He got a job in Seattle for a big ol' company.
Yeah.
That doesn't sell things and ship them to you.
There we go.
It's a different one.
So you can probably put two and two together.
He's very, very happy. He's super excited about this new job. And I helped him drive from Orlando, Florida to Seattle, Washington in a span of about 3.5 days.
That's insane. Yeah. That's like a Cannonball Run type situation.
It was crazy. It was really fun. We had a really good time, and maybe I'll leave some of the stories for when we're both on and we can chat about it.
I just have to say this. Which one of you was Burt Reynolds and which was Dom DeLuise?
Oh, I was definitely Dom DeLuise in that situation.
that takes a hero to admit that he's the Dom DeLuise to the Burt Reynolds.
But
no one is going to get the Smoking the Bandit reference.
Smoking the Bandit is a reference that zero people that listen to our podcast will understand.
What the fuck is this guy talking about? Who's Dom DeLuise?
What was the monkey Burt Reynolds?
Oh, I think that was it. Clint Eastwood, Any Which Way But Loose?
Oh, Clint Eastwood. Yeah, that wasn't Burt Reynolds. Yeah.
Same era. Fast Cars.
Yep. So we drove cross country. I got super sick. And then flew back to Tampa. I've had a couple weeks. I'm ready
to go home.
You've been
traveling like crazy.
Yeah, I'm going home tonight, and I'm very excited about it, even though New York is an icy tundra right now, according to
the weather looks crazy. Well, we're excited for Scott. Hopefully he gets all his gear set up again, and he can be back on in a few weeks, and then we can talk to him. He can fully reveal what he's up to, hopefully.
Yeah.
And it's exciting stuff and something that he's been working toward a very long time, very diligently. So hats off to him. It's awesome. The show goes on no matter what. So it's really cool. On today's show, we have a lot of – I'm doing Scott's rundown part, which is weird. We're going to be doing talking about the new Star Wars trilogy from Rian Johnson. Marvel leaving Netflix and also the new Disney streaming service that's been announced. We're going to talk about so many games coming out in, I guess, October through December, so Q4 game insanity. We're going to review Stranger Things Season 2. Hold on, let me turn my show notes here. Talk about some headphones from Sennheiser and initial impressions of the Xbox One X.
Cool.
Yeah, so it's a jam-packed show.
Actually, this show is not legitimately brought to you by anybody, but Humble Bundle is doing an Extra Life benefit right now, and I thought I'd mention it because I think it's a worthwhile cause.
Yes.
And so head on over, you get yourself some good games and get benefit some good people.
Do that for sure. We'll put links in the show notes.
Yeah.
Or we say we
say we do, and I don't think we ever have.
We may have once or twice. Well, let's take a quick break and come back with some news. News.
Oh, throwback.
News. hey, so there's this new Star Wars trilogy coming out, and I legit did a happy dance when I saw this. We kind of knew it was going to happen.
I mean, we knew that they would have to do something more than they had currently announced, right? Like, they're not going to buy Star Wars for however many billions of dollars and then be like, well, those four movies were good, and then be like finished with it.
It's so weird because we grew up in a time where there wasn't a ton of Star Wars.
No.
I mean, there was very little in terms of content other than, you know, books and comics and stuff like that. And now it's like we have movies, at least six movies that we know about that are coming within the next decade.
That means they got to announce a new show soon too, right?
Well, they did.
Did they announce that too? I didn't see that.
The new Disney streaming service is going to have a Star Wars television show. There's no info about it yet, but there's going to be this Disney streaming service. By the way, I guess we can tie these two stories in together.
Sure.
Is going to be insane because they're going to take all the stuff that they own from Netflix and purge Netflix.
It's gone.
All the Pixar
movies, Disney,
all that stuff.
Gone.
Yeah, all gone. And add it to their new streaming service and then have their own original content there as well. So it's like, it's going to be another one of those services that you kind of have to subscribe to.
We'll see what the price is. I'm like,
yeah,
we're getting into a weird era now, you know, where there's like, everybody's got their own streaming service.
Yeah.
And before you know it, you're paying $110 to watch all the TV you want to watch
as much as cable, right?
Yeah.
What do you think this new trilogy is going to be? So they haven't said anything, just that it's a new place we haven't seen before with new characters. So not a Skywalker trilogy.
I don't know. I'm terrible with these Star Wars predictions. You and Scott always do way better than I do. My assumption would be that I feel like they're going to go older. I don't think they're going to go beyond the current trilogy. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think they're going to go further into that world. I think they'll go back and tell stories that were never told.
Okay.
Older eras would be my guess.
I think that's definitely a good bet. I mean, I personally would love to see them, rather than go forward or backward, I would like to see them kind of go sideways and do a portion of the galaxy that we haven't really seen before.
Yeah.
You know, just with different creatures and a different interpretation of the Force, right? Where there's no Sith, there's no Jedi, but there's Force and Force powers. But it's just sort of how like the night witches have a different adaptation of it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, imagine like almost like a medieval fantasy in the Star Wars galaxy, which could be completely plausible.
Yeah. I mean,
if they're not connected to, you know, the rebellion or the Empire, or like in their own little pocket.
Yeah.
It could be really, really cool.
It could be cool. It'll be interesting only in the sense that, like, it's going to kind of define what makes a Star Wars story, I guess.
Yeah, it's true.
Do you know what I mean? Like, because so far, you know, with the exception of some of the many books that are no longer really canon or anything, so far, like, a Star Wars story generally means Jedi and Sith, generally means, you know, the Empire and the Rebellion or some take on that.
Right.
So it's like, if they stray real far from that and they're just sort of in the world, like what ends up being the story, what makes it a Star Wars story then? Which could be really interesting. I don't know. That's really true.
I mean, I think a lot of these Star Wars stories, like they just name the Han Solo. It's like Han Solo, a Star Wars story. So it's like a little side tale that's sort of a different take on the Star Wars galaxy, but with characters that we kind of know and love. I would love to see them just start doing more of these. And just kind of, you know, a romance or like a Star Wars romantic comedy.
It's can they? Like, I guess that's the thing is like, can they pull that off?
Yeah.
It could be really amazing, but I don't know.
Or it could be terrible. And I do have a fear of oversaturation. I don't think I'll get there. But I think some people might, like, using my parents as an example, like they can barely keep up with the new trilogy. Oh, there's a new Star Wars movie.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's like, yeah, there's a new Star Wars movie. So
Which
I don't know.
Which parent's voice was that?
It's kind of a mix of the both.
Just both
like,
of them.
Yeah, together. It's like they become like an old wizard when they combine their powers. They just become this old magical creature. I don't know. I do fear that some people may get a little sick of it, but it's just such a huge franchise. But
yeah,
you know, I'm curious. From what I've read about Rian Johnson, am I saying his name right? It's Rian.
I thought so. Yeah. I think so.
I've seen a lot of interviews with Kathleen Kennedy, and she's like, he's loves the franchise so much, and he's like the one director that came to set every day that everybody got along with, that just had like pure enthusiasm for the project every single day he was there. So he really impressed Disney quite a bit, which is I think is why they gave him this trilogy. And from what I understand, episode 8 is very different from the other episodes, but also internally they like it a lot. Like all the officials that have seen it and like all the big behind the scenes folks are like, this is a really solid movie. Yeah. So
he makes great movies.
Yeah. I'm excited to see what comes of it. I think I will be one of the suckers that subscribes to the, I mean, if I can't
I'll
get
subscribe to it. I'm just saying that like we're entering that world where, it's just going to be a lot of services. You're going to be making, you're either going to be constantly managing it or you're going to be like paying a lot or you're, it's going to now start to cause like, or require effort. So like before you could be like Hulu and Netflix, $20 a month, like whatever. And yeah, you just kind of move on with it, or not even like $15 a month. But Netflix has been going up in price. Hulu's, you know, Hulu's pretty much still the same. Hmm. And then it's like, well, now do you pay for, well, like, what else do I pay for? Do you pay for Showtime or do you pay for HBO? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, if you want to watch Game of Thrones, you're going to pay for HBO, you know, whatever it might be. And it's like, as you keep adding those services, it's just that bill's creeping up, man, whether you,
yeah,
you know. And I think that's how cable ended up doing it, was just like, oh, it's an extra $3 this month, you know, and oh, it's an extra $8 this month. And then before you know it, you're like, why is my cable bill $110?
Yeah.
You
know? Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's very true. So I don't know. I have high hopes for it. I think it's going to be okay. But like you said, price point's really important.
I bet they'll come in around like $6-7.
Think so?
Yeah, I think they already said that they weren't going to cost as much as Netflix. They've already come good. Out saying that.
I mean, honestly, like for me as a dad, like movies like Zootopia and Moana and stuff go a very long way.
Yeah, yeah.
Like if it can pacify my toddler for like 40 minutes, it's like
right.
Yeah, like golden. You know? And having those taken away from Netflix is going to definitely hurt because the act of like taking a disc and putting it in is also very challenging with a toddler. So. I hope that, you know, the transition from them purging Netflix to actually starting the new service is pretty quick.
It also isn't for what, a year they said? Like
I think
end
yeah.
of 2018.
I think it's next year it's gonna happen. Yeah, so we'll see. You wanna talk about games?
Sure. We're zooming through this news.
We are. I'm a fast talker. video games. Well, there's a
that's
lot of video
Scott
games.
That slows us down every
he
time.
He is. There's a lot of games out, man. Have you had a chance to pick up any of the new batch?
No.
Yeah. I have prepaid for Battlefront 2. And like we said before we started recording, mainly because I want to play the story.
Yeah.
But it's just a crazy time. And the
when
thing,
does that come out?
Tuesday, next
oh,
Tuesday.
Oh, jeez. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And the thing that's crazy about this quarter is that everything that's coming out is getting really well reviewed. Mm-hmm. Even some of the indies, like Hand of Fate 2 just came out. And I was a huge fan of Hand of
Fate.
You
loved Hand of Fate.
That came out last week, and that's getting really reviewed really well. It's like, well, how the hell do you play Hand of Fate when Assassin's Creed Origins is out?
Yeah.
Wolfenstein's out. Yeah. You know, Star Wars is about to be out.
Shadow of War is out.
Also getting good reviews. It's bonkers,
Cuphead.
Man. Cuphead. Yeah, we talked a little bit about Cuphead on the show. But I don't know. I think it's interesting. Like, I think that the thing that's challenging about release schedules like this is it used to feel like everything would come out and there'd be a couple. Call of Duty came out too. Not that we played those anymore,
Call
but
of Duty
yeah. But it used to be that games would come out and there'd be a handful of like stinkers. You'd be like, oh, here's the one big breakout of like this season. And now it's like they're all good. Like Destiny just came out on PC as well. Yeah. So I also purchased that, but I have not played it once.
There's like a new season of Overwatch and a bunch of new people, right? And that
happened
too.
Yeah, the new character's not out yet, but she's about to go live. She's on the public test realm now. So it's a very busy time. I'm very jealous of like teenagers and people that have a lot of time because it's their games are all great, you know. The games. I wish I had more time to play them to talk about all these and go into in-depth reviews. But I mean, I guess like, we could talk about what we've heard. But for the most part, it's just like, you know, we're curious. If you're listening, let us know on social media what you have been playing of these Q4 releases and which ones you're enjoying. I see a lot of our listeners playing Assassin's Creed and really liking it. Here they added a loot system with like rares and epics and legendaries and stuff.
I've just been away from that series for so long at this point that it's like, do I get back in? Or like, I dole my gaming time out so carefully. Oh, Mario? Jesus, there's a Mario whole Odyssey. Slate of Switch games that we haven't even mentioned that are out there. So we were talking about, I've almost picked up a Switch on the past 2 weeks of my long journey across the country, like multiple times. And the funniest one was Scott and I stopped somewhere, went into a Target because we were like getting coffee at the, it was like the Starbucks or something.
Yeah.
We went into a Target and he was out in the car with the dog and I just kind of like walked around. I went over to the Switches and like looked at him for a second.
They had him in stock?
Yeah.
Oh man. Yeah.
And I was like, ugh. And I was like, all right. I went back to the car. I sat down and was like, I almost bought a Switch. And he goes, I almost did too. I was like, oh man. We're so close to doing this.
Yeah, I mean, it's one thing if you're driving cross country and like being able to play a game like Zelda or Mario Odyssey on the road is just so cool.
Yeah.
Now,
but yeah, so many. I mean, I don't know. Shadow of War, I think, is my big one that I'm going to get when I get back. And then I want to play Star Wars pretty bad. I want to do that campaign.
Campaign's looking pretty awesome, man. Yeah. It's looking pretty good. I've heard nothing but good things. There's a prequel novel that just came out. About, you know, the new Star Wars game, and I was really eager to listen to that or to read that before it came out, but I'm not going to have time.
Yeah.
So that's a bit of a bummer, but yeah, I mean, you know, as Star Wars fans, there's a lot of controversy about this game. Have you heard about the controversy regarding the loot boxes?
Oh yeah.
I don't want to get too into it because it's like every gaming podcast has talked about this and it's giving me a nosebleed. But the big controversy is that apparently in Star Wars Battlefront 2, you can purchase loot crates. And there are upgrades to weaponry and to your items that can actually give you an edge on the battlefield as opposed to just cosmetic stuff.
Right.
So they're saying that, you know, it has become more or less a pay-to-win experience.
Right.
If you just want to be a whale and dump, you know, $1,000 into your Star Wars Battlefront account, which people do.
Yeah.
Then you can get some of the best stuff in the game and, you know, and be a winner. But it's like,
luckily for me, even getting those upgrades, I still won't be a winner.
Oh, yeah, me either.
I don't care. I'll suck.
That's the thing. Like, I see like a lot of people complaining about this, and they're, you know, the internet's doing its thing and like giving the game bad reviews and downvoting it and stuff because of this system. But there's a lot to it. I mean,
you know what would work better though? Like, just not buying the upgrades.
Yeah.
Just like, don't buy them, and then you'll speak with your dollars, and then those dollars will go away, and they'll be like, well, that system didn't work. Let's try a different one.
That's why it's being successful right now, because it is generating a lot of revenue for these companies, you know. But I think, there have been just a slew of layoffs in the games industry. You know, big companies like Telltale just laid off 80 people this week, and EA is laying off a lot of people. A lot of this is happening because the models are changing, right? And the way that games are being developed now, it's incredibly expensive. And so these loot boxes, although people hate them and complain about them all the time, people buy them and they keep studios open.
Yeah.
So if a game is being made and it doesn't have a system that can generate consistent revenue, then the game might be in trouble and the studio might be in trouble. No, it's okay.
I think it's a good
conversation, though.
It really interests me because it's like it's becoming a boom or bust market, right? So game engineering is like hire and fire based on how much money a game is making or whether how big a game is going to be when they're making it. And it's modeling itself after Hollywood in a way where they know they're going to make a $140 million movie, so they need to staff up and it's big budgets and everybody gets hired and all this stuff. The difference being that Hollywood, like, those jobs are known to be impermanent. They're known to be jobs that you come in, you work for 3 months, and then you go get a different job, and you're generally unionized too, which is a different thing. But in the games engineering world, the jobs are still treated more like my job, which is like engineering for tech means that you have a job year round. It's just that's your job. You go work for whoever, Google or Facebook or something. And so it's like a different mindset in a different industry. but they're applying like rules from a separate industry.
They're modeled exactly the same.
So they're like the people doing the work feel like, oh, well, this is my job. Like I'm here and I'm going to be here for X amount of time. And they get paid as if it's like a yearly salary. They're not making, I mean, like spoiler alert to everybody looking for games jobs. They don't make any more money. I make more in tech than they probably do in games doing the same kind of work. So they're not like making killings or anything. I mean, they make good money, but it's looked at as like a yearly salary kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, but then they're really only getting paid for like 6 months at a time almost, where studios are like closing doors left and right, or publishers decide to pull funding on a thing out of the blue. And it's just, it's very weird. I'm like waiting for it to, it's got to like figure out how to get legs at some point.
It is, because it's very, I think the more layoffs that happen, I think the mentality is changing. Like people that work in the industry are starting to understand that there is very little permanence.
Yeah.
Which is sad, because it's like you said, these people are expecting,
I think that's
games
where
take years. So they're there working for years on a thing, and then their job is then hinging on the sale of one product, right? And if it doesn't,
but also that years part, sorry.
No,
also that years part isn't always true, because what will generally happen is staff up moments, right? So like you'll start off with a team of 30 and they'll be building the game, and they're, you know, you've got like 10 artists, 10 or 15 engineers, and maybe like 5 product and QA or something. I'm just spitballing fake numbers, but you got that. But when the game hits like mile marker 1, you're like, oh, we got to staff up. We're at mile marker 2. We're heading towards mile marker 2, and there's bigger things we've got to accomplish. So you staff up to 40 people.
Mm.
And then you're like, okay, we got to get to that end mile marker. We need to staff up to 80 people. Like it'll jump in like an insane amount. And they full well know that once that third mile marker gets hit, they're going to lay off 40 of those 80.
Right.
You know, like, it's this insane ramp up where they're hiring a bunch of people and then laying them off. And it's just, it's baffling that they're getting away with it so far.
It makes you wonder that, I mean, because you know that they know that that's going to happen.
Yeah.
But the people they're hiring aren't necessarily told that. They're kind of operating under the assumption that their job is a permanent job.
Yeah.
If they were told from the very beginning with full transparency that, okay, this is a 12-month gig, you'll do this job, the product will come out, and then your job is over, I don't know if as many people would apply for a job like that or move.
Right.
So it's kind of a, you know, it's kind of a smoke show. It's
but
like,
that's kind of where I feel like, you know, this is, again, another wild right turn. Your feelings on unions aside, not yours personally, but whoever's listening.
I don't have a union, so
it is that, though, that kind of market is sort of what unions are made for. You know, they're not made for people who are tenured and in a place like teachers have a union, which is baffling half the time. Like it makes sense somewhat in the sense that there's like a national union, but it also, as we all know, like hinders a lot of teachers getting actual things that they need in the classroom. But like Hollywood has a union because those people don't technically have like a boss, you know, like they're just people, like production assistants just show up and do 6 week gigs and then they're done. They like go somewhere else. And if it weren't for a union, they'd be getting crazy underpaid. They'd have no minimums, you know, like it would be terrible.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of what's happening to games right now. And it's very interesting to me to wait and see what's going to happen here, because like, while they can say like, oh, well, this game just didn't do well enough to support Studio X, Y, and Z, it's not like those publishers aren't making money. Like,
right. No,
they're raking in money.
Absolutely.
Like, you know.
I mean, like using Visceral as a perfect example, Visceral made great games. Like, you know, like Dead Space, the whole trilogy, some people don't like 3, but I thought the whole trilogy was just beautiful. And they kind of, you know, revolutionized UI in a lot of ways. Like a lot of the UI in that game was just like the best anyone had ever seen. And to have a studio that was, you know, now working on a Star Wars game led by Amy Hennig, just be like, you know what, this is too expensive and no one really likes single player narrative experiences anymore, and it's not going to make
I do too
but it's not going to keep generating money, right? So to have that, you know, have that shut down for that reason is just wild to me. It's like, it'd be like, I mean, they're so good at what they do.
It
had nothing to do with their talent level or like, you know, so what if Dead Space didn't sell 5 million copies, it sold 4 million or whatever. It's still a lot of games. It still made a lot of money, but it's like, no, we want to make a fucking butt ton of money. So it's like,
and what's crazy about that to me is that the way the way Hollywood works, which is, I think, the real new comparison. Games are moving closer and closer to what Hollywood does with movies or even TV. The way that works is that those companies make their big budget movies, but they also pad it with like 10 movies that they know are only going to make, you know, these movies are only going to make $20 million, but we're only going to spend five to make it. So that's a $15 million margin we're going to make, you know, hopefully somewhere in there.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll do 10 of those so that if a $140 million movie flops, which is always hilarious to me because it still makes like $100 million.
Right, flop. You know?
But if a $140 million movie flops, they've padded it with these smaller, you know, more kind of like different movies, not popcorn, not giant Marvel movies or giant Superman movies or whatever. But game studios, like for whatever reason, the AAA publishers, it feels like they're kind of going like, well, every game has to be Destiny or Call of Duty, or like every single one of them has to make, you know, buku hundreds of millions of dollars.
Right. Yeah. The double A, I think the days of the double A studio, they're gone. Like no one, you know, now it's like you're either super indie, like Cuphead with like six dudes,
or you're
a studio with 100 people and you have to make $1 billion or else you're fucked.
Yeah.
So it's weird. It's in a weird space. So.
Like I would have happily, you know, and I don't know if Visceral was making this kind of game or whatever, but like, it would have been awesome to me if they were like, all right, we're only going to spend, you know, and I don't know budgets. I'm wildly making this up. If they were like, we're only going to spend $10 million to make a Star Wars game, you know, so it needs to sell, you know, 1 million to 1.5 million copies. Like, I feel like a $10 million Star Wars game would have made me very happy.
Oh, yeah,
I would have been like, this is a great game.
Yeah.
And it doesn't need to blow the numbers out of the proportion. Like, it just needs to be a good game that gets put out, lasts, you know, like 20-hour playthrough or something. And then, like, we all are happy and we go home. But that, like, it just is gone. It just doesn't exist anymore.
I feel like AAA right now, it seems like every game is trying to push the limits of what is humanly possible at this time in game development. And that's awesome. Like keep pushing the limit, but games don't have to cost, you know, $250 million to make. It's like,
I feel like we need Valve or a Blizzard to put out these like smaller games, like make it cool again to do like small narrative games that make okay money. And like, everybody's like, oh, okay, cool.
I mean, in the grand scheme of things, the scope of Overwatch is actually pretty small. It's like you get 20 at the time, 22 heroes or 20 heroes. And then you make them shoot at each other with, like, you know, a bunch of maps.
But it's still you know, a shooter PvP kind of thing. Like, I mean, just, like, little contained games where, like, if Valve made a series of Half-Life games again, they would be, like, everybody would lose their mind over that kind of stuff.
Sure.
Even if they were small in scope and, like, you know, came out and did their own little thing, but...
Yeah, I don't know. It's in a weird space, and like, and not to go on about it forever, but if you look at Telltale, which specializes in,
I mean, I would have pointed at them a minute ago, but now we can't.
You know? Narrative experiences, and it's like 80 people's a lot of people. They're probably going to be finishing up the stuff they're working on, but then you're going to probably see them slow down a lot because that's a number of different teams, right? So
yeah.
It's a sad, sad time.
Sad state. With that depressing news.
With that depressing news. Let's take a quick break and then come back and talk Stranger Things.
Sounds good.
Cool.
Hey, got a second? What's up? I'm podcasting. Oh.
Ready? Hey, Ash.
Hey, Matt.
Let's talk about Stranger Things 2.
Man. So my viewing experience was... not exactly how I wanted to view Stranger Things season 2. I had house guests and I had to watch a lot of it on my PC, which is okay. But it definitely is a beautifully shot. I just want to say visually it's awesome, but I felt like the music in season 2.
The music was great.
It was so good. It was so good. All the licensed stuff that they used was absolutely perfect. Friggin' Jimmy Henson's on the soundtrack. Which when I found that out, fantastic. I was just like so happy for him. So for our listeners that don't know, Jimmy Henson did our theme music a long time ago, and now he's on Stranger Things during two very poignant scenes.
Yeah.
Really good stuff.
Let me ask, though, when you watched it, were you sitting in, like, your comfortable office chair?
I was in an office chair, actually.
Like just kind of leaning back.
It was
back,
okay.
Leaning
should,
back a little and just
I
watching
complain.
Your...
I was eating snacks and it was okay.
I was hunched over my iPad in an airport with headphones on in like an uncomfortable stool where there was a plug nearby that I could plug my iPad in while I was watching.
I'm very sorry. You take the prize for shitty viewing experiences of Stranger Things season 2.
I watched the first 2 episodes at home and then the next... 7, however many,
yeah,
9 episodes?
9 total.
The next 7 episodes I watched on my iPad in various places, from a plane to the Seattle airport, where I spent 16 hours of my life.
Ooh, that's rough. At least, you know what, in grand scheme of things, I like that airport quite a bit.
It was all right. Yeah. The problem was that every flight was so screwed up that like every food place was full and seats were all
just,
taken.
Just
like, it was
pandemonium.
Just, it was a,
well,
yeah,
that sucks.
Anyways.
What
yeah,
didn't
I,
suck.
I agree heavily. I think that the switch up from having... because I don't feel like they licensed a bunch of music for season 1.
I don't... If they did, I don't
They did
remember.
The Clash. Because, yeah. I mean, that was a callback to season 1. Was yeah. The, was Should I Stay or Should I Go? And they did a couple other songs that I think Will's older brother... who mm-hmm. I just blanked on his character's name.
I can't remember either.
Played on his mixtapes and stuff. So they did have some licensed music, but this time it felt much more intentional and much more tied into like scenes that were going on, which I thought was really cool.
Good.
My biggest, and we will try to be, I guess, remotely spoiler-free for now. We won't spoil anything.
Yeah, we won't do that.
Unless
we'll do
like,
a whole spoilery
hey,
episode maybe, but yeah. We can stay vague.
Because Scott hasn't even seen it, so we'll
Scott
stay
hasn't
big.
Seen season 1,
yeah,
so
I know.
He
I
can
tell
just,
him to
yeah,
watch it.
Yeah.
So my biggest point on this season of Stranger Things is, holy cow, the acting. Like, all of the kids, even the adults, the new actors, everybody just brought, like, such a fantastic, like, emotional performance. And Will deserves a freaking Emmy. Like,
yeah,
the kid that
he
plays
was really
Will,
good. You and I talked about that on Slack the other day. I was just like... You know, I saw an interview with all the kids, and they were saying in the first season, Will only really had acted 2 days with everybody else.
Yeah, I mean, he was gone.
He was gone. spoiler, in the Upside Down for the whole first season. He's sort of front and center this season, and holy cow, this kid is just like, you know, like everyone talks about, you know, Gaten Maserato being like great. But I feel like Will this season was just like, holy crap.
Yeah. And Millie Bobby Brown as Jane or Eleven was also fantastic, but Will was just the big surprise for me. Yeah. And then, so to give out an award too, really quick, the most improved character in my eyes, friggin' Steve with the good hair.
Oh my God, Steve! Steve goes from being like kind of like high school jock. D-bag season 1 where you're like you don't know if he's going to be a villain. He kind of redeems himself at the end of season 1 to this time being like not really too much of a spoiler, but he's like the ultimate like big brother to these kids.
He's fantastic.
And they did such a great job with putting him in a scenario where you're like how is Steve going to fit into this story?
Yeah.
And they slide him in like the most genius way possible.
Yeah.
Like it's sort of I don't want to spoil too much, but in the 11th hour it's like who are the kids going to call?
Yeah.
This other guy has experienced this crazy stuff with them.
Yeah.
They're not buddies with him, but it's like he's been through the shit too.
Yeah.
So his role in this is just great. And I feel like he, you know, he ends up becoming like one of the biggest heroes of season 2.
Yeah.
And I just felt like he did a great job. But yeah, man, there's some crazy stuff.
Yeah. The whole season I thought did a good job of opening up the world. I thought they did. A pretty great job of opening up characters' stories and kind of like tying emotions between different characters. And I just thought really well done. I wasn't really let down with any of the episodes. We can non-spoilery talk about episode 7 that somehow every blog has a problem with except for us. But,
yeah. I think we should briefly mention it.
Sort of a side story episode, does some background on a character.
Yeah.
And ties in some new characters into the story.
It's a very good way of describing it without describing it. I was like, how the hell are we going to talk about this?
But I thought written fine. I thought the characters that they added were I thought I understood what people were saying. They were cookie cutter and all this other stuff. But at the same time, I felt like if they weren't archetypes from the 80s, I would feel like they're, if they were just like people that they'd thrown in, it would feel a little weird. And I actually thought using these like almost like real stereotypes from the 80s
right.
as characters in the story fit in such like a nice nostalgic like kind of way.
And you
like,
only had, you know, 50 minutes to tell yeah. this side story. I think a lot of people were upset because it moves away from Hawkins.
Sure.
And you have, you know, this side story with one of the main characters and you're like, well, why is this character here in the first place? But in the end, I thought it was just really important for that character's arc. And I felt like while the additional characters that were added were somewhat stereotypical, I felt like they were, real. I mean, like, you know, like I was telling you on Slack, I'm like, I grew up with a bunch of punks and that's what punks were like, you know, like they dressed like idiots. They acted like idiots.
Yes.
They were kind of stupid and immature and like, you know, they were maniacs. So I was like, those were real people.
Yeah.
Like, so
I thought it did a really good job of explaining a certain point from season one to season one also that, that wasn't filled in yet. And they really kind of like put some,
thing,
but they used a character from season one and filled in a little bit of like, hey, you know, here you go. And then kind of moved along that piece of it just in that episode, because it was a thing that wasn't tied in to any of the other episodes whatsoever. And I was kind of wondering if they were going to mention this person or like do anything with them. Mm-hmm. So it was interesting to see them use that episode as a growth point for that as well.
Yeah.
I thought it was fine, but ultimately I thought the show was really good. I would actually argue that I liked the ending, not the last episode. I think the last episode with the kids at the high school, at the dance or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that ruins anything, right?
No.
We can edit that if we have to, but I think it's pretty vague.
They go to a dance. It's cool.
I thought that was fantastic and felt like any dance that any one of us went to in like middle school, high school.
I still, by the way, have memories and pictures of my best friend Mark and I at that age.
Yeah.
In the worst, I had like a bolo tie that was made of ivory.
Yeah.
In a purple silk shirt.
Perfect.
And like, I just was like, this was me like sitting there like wanting to cry.
Yeah.
Just feeling like, what the hell's going on in my life? Like that age is so hard. And I think they captured it very well.
I thought they did a good job, but I was going to say the end of the, you know, epic story. I thought season one's ending was a little stronger, maybe, a little tighter. And it was an easier narrative, I think, because it was a smaller narrative really at the end of the day. But I thought the ending of season one felt a little more like, good, I guess is the way to put it. But I also know that like at the end of season one, they didn't know there was going to be a season two.
Yeah.
And at the end of season two, they knew there was going to be a season four. So they were, I think they kind of couldn't like, they're like, we're going to close this, you know, this storyline, but we don't want to like, we gotta make sure we can keep telling stories. Like it can't just end everything and be done.
Right.
Whereas season one, it felt like it could have ended. And if they never made another season, we all would have been like, what a great show.
Stranger Things kind of like, I remember when season one came out, it was right after Lincoln was born. And the show kind of snuck out. Like I remember I used to subscribe to Entertainment Weekly and there was like an article with Winona Ryder about, hey, she's in this wacky new show.
Yeah.
And like, there was no information about Stranger Things.
No marketing or anything.
No, and then the show came out, it was like, kaboom.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, it went crazy. Deservedly so. But yeah, I mean, I agree with you 100%. Like, I ended up liking season two more than season one. I felt like it just had this energy, and like, the second half is like, basically just like one wild night.
Yeah.
Like, just like, it's
That's crazy.
Yeah. It's like, just a, like, one crazy, like, experience, you know, and all these characters that you don't necessarily think that didn't really cross over too much in the first season cross over in a great way. Hopper, we didn't really talk about him. Like,
I mean, just another great, he's awesome. I'm excited for Hellboy now. I think he's gonna be awesome.
Oh yeah,
in Hellboy.
Yeah, he's so good in this. And we can say that he has like some of his scenes with Eleven are just like,
oh, they're great.
They're just beautiful.
Yeah
So yeah, Stranger Things season two. Maybe we'll do a spoiler cast one of these days when we have a free time.
We'll make Scott listen to watch episode, season one rather.
Yeah.
If for some reason you avoided this show because you thought it was like nostalgia bait or something, I will say that yes, it's nostalgia bait, but done in like the best way possible.
Right, and I think it's like honestly, like there's moments in season two that take place in an arcade with like kids riding the bike, and like if you at all grew up in like the early '90s. or 80s, you'll remember this in your life because that's what we all did.
Yeah.
So it's real. Like it's like it's like watching a little time capsule just with monsters and stuff too. So
go watch some Stranger Things. It's worth it. Yeah. I watched it hunched over an iPad and still extremely enjoyed it.
I watched it on my computer.
I think I'm going to watch it on my TV at some point and redo season two.
Christina hasn't watched it yet, which she's really mad about. She keeps falling asleep. She's like grandma. But don't tell her I said that. But yeah, she's going to watch it. I might sneak out and watch it again with her.
Cool.
So let's talk about some headphones quick. Sennheiser sent me some headphones to review. We don't do a ton of hardware reviews on the show, but I was excited to check these out. And these are the Sennheiser Need for Speed Payback Special Edition headphones. They're pretty awesome. They're not headphones, but they're also they have a mic built in as well. So they're built for streaming and talking with your pals online. I felt like all the levels are really good. The audio is nice and crisp. I did try it online just with the Skype call, and it actually has a really solid mic on it too. So if you're looking for a pair of headphones for your online communications or for podcasting, actually will probably do a pretty good job of that as well. And the thing that really stood out to me that I liked the most was the what's this part on the top of the head, like the little headband called? The headband?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll call it that. It's super comfortable. It has like two giant pillow pads on it. Made me kind of look like a little bit like an alien when I wore it on my head because it sticks up real high, but very, very comfortable for long periods of play. So if you're looking for a new pair of headphones, the Need for Speed Payback Sennheisers are available now, and they're pretty damn good. I would definitely check them out. And, you know, I don't get to keep these, so I got to send them back. So I'm saying it out of the truth of my heart.
Awesome.
So good stuff. What else? Oh,
last up.
Xbox One X. So, full disclosure, I got one.
Yeah.
Listeners of the show know why I got one.
Yeah.
Because the damn disc has been stuck in my Xbox for 3 years. And I was going to get an S, but I was like, I'm going to wait for the X. And I saved my shillings.
What is the price again? I forget.
I think it's $500.
$499?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
It was just an honest question. It wasn't like a judgment.
No, it was expensive. Yeah. I was like, this is not a cheap thing that I'm buying. Yeah. So it's $500. The Xbox did something that a lot of you probably noticed. For the weeks leading up to the launch of the X, they had like a how to back up all your info guide up on the dashboard. If you haven't seen it, it's just like, hey, like if you have a portable hard drive, plug it in now, hit a couple buttons. We'll take all your games, zap them onto the portable hard drive, and all your preferences and all your apps, put them on the hard drive. And when the X comes out, you plug your hard drive in and then it just transfers over.
Right.
So that's what I did. It worked pretty well. A couple apps didn't transfer over, which was really weird. Like my YouTube app actually was like, wasn't there. And when I tried to find it on the dashboard, it's like YouTube app's no longer available. And I was like, did something happen with YouTube? But I was able to like get it off an older hard drive that I had. So, that being said, it installed very, very quickly. And the thing that I noticed the most about it is that obviously with the hardware differences between the launch edition of the Xbox and the Xbox One X, it's a completely different animal. It's like, you know, the original Xbox, I want to say, came out in maybe 2014, maybe longer than that.
Yeah. No.
Earlier than
13,
that. 13. Let's look it up on the podcast.
Let's look it up.
Scott would know this off. Scott has this tattooed on his butt.
It's backwards on his chest so he can read it in the mirror every morning.
Xbox launch date. Just because I'm curious and this is a terrible thing to look up
and
live.
It's good podcasting.
It is. 2013. Yeah, you're right.
November, I thought I was here.
November 22nd, 2013. So yeah, that's how old my original system was. It was chugging a lot. I've read a lot that the S actually has a lot of upgraded RAM and hardware that the original launch didn't have. So you probably notice a much faster experience and everything.
We've talked
nicer.
About this.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Where you're like, this chugs. And I was like, no, it's good.
Oh my God. It was getting so bad. I was playing like Agents of Mayhem and I was like, I'm probably getting like 20 frames per second. Like it was just bad. So this is just like, plugging this in and playing older games. Even without 4K HDR.
What?
Yeah.
Why would you play without 4K HDR, Ash?
I don't have a 4K TV, which is something that I have to work on for the future. But
work on.
Yeah, we'll see. Well, how do you sneakily switch out a 60-inch TV without your wife noticing? Be like, I have to get a very similar-looking model one day and just be like, wow, this TV looks really
it's
nice.
It's a Sony now. When did that happen?
She honestly probably wouldn't notice.
Yeah.
As long as it had the same remote, I'd be okay. So anyway, everything looks insane now because it has a new graphics card and, like, quadruple the RAM that it used to have.
Yeah.
So I loaded up like something very basic, like in Disney Infinity, which used to actually chug on my Xbox. Yeah. I'm not kidding. Like you could just see like, you know, frame rates and slowdowns. And now it's like, you know, beautiful and flawless. I loaded up Titanfall 2 and played a little bit of the campaign on the Xbox One X. And oh my God, it's just like,
did you load up that Forza?
I haven't played Forza yet, but Titanfall has 60 frames per second now.
Oh, cool.
So they put a patch out. So 60 frames per second.
Do you get 60 on 4K or do you get 60 at 1080 on that
60
thing?
At 1080.
1080, yeah.
I don't know what it does at 4K.
Which is probably fine. I mean, who cares? Honestly. Well,
that's the thing. Like, I have never experienced 4K.
Yeah.
I know what HDR does.
Yeah.
And I think that's great.
Yes.
But I haven't experienced 4K HDR, like, in my living room. I've seen it, like, on a TV at, like, a Best Buy.
Right.
And I'm like, well, that looks nice. Apparently for gaming, like 4K HDR is like going to make you poop your pants.
Well, I think that for sure. I think the bigger issue though is that, I mean, as far as I can tell, my layman's critique of this is that you'd rather play 60 frames per second at 1080 than 30 frames per second at 4K. Because like the frame rate will look better than the actual, you know, resolution that you're only going to sort of see or notice.
Right, right.
So HDR, on the other hand, yeah. HDR looks good. It's the thing that everybody should be looking into.
Whiter whites, blacker blacks.
Yeah. I mean, everything just, well, like, a better highlighted picture. It looks more like something you would see than, like, what your eyes do as opposed to how a thing gets rendered, you know?
Well, we'll see if I can sneakily get my hands on. I mean,
get a Christmas sale, man.
Yeah.
Get you to Black Friday.
Black Friday. Oh, my gosh.
Go punch some people in the face to get into Walmart.
Best Buy. God. Nightmare. Not worth it. But then, like, what do you do with your old TVs? Just becomes this thing.
I told you, you just throw them on Nextdoor for $100 and somebody comes.
Nextdoor, yes. Craigslist, no. That's
no,
how
don't
you
do
get
Craigslist.
Like, you get like your kidneys taken and shit.
Nextdoor, it's like a person who's like, hi.
That's true.
I live down the street and I want a TV.
That's true. That's true. But anyway, Xbox One X, you know, it's only been out a week, so I've only had a chance to play a few games on it. I'm
waiting. Seen people saying that the new games look absolutely
stunning. I mean, that's Battlefront 2 campaign. I'm like, I'm ready. I'm gonna like pull my chair out in front of the TV. I'm just gonna like put my headphones on and like play some Space Wars and shoot some stuff at 60 frames per second. So it's good stuff. If you're looking for a new system, I definitely say, you know, go ahead and take the plunge. It just runs silky smooth. Feels a lot like a PC, which is nice.
That's awesome.
So yeah, I like it.
I'll probably hold off. I think we were talking about this a little. I think the One S is a really good machine, and I've been very happy with it.
Mm-hmm.
And while 60 frames at 4K would be cool, I also want a Switch, and I want, like, you know, I mean, like, there's other things that I want. And since the S is due, if I still had the launched edition, I'd probably get it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think at this point I'm just going to roll with the S. And then the sales on the S, like, if you're looking for an Xbox right now, if you don't have a 4K TV or you're not planning on getting one anytime soon, the S is going to be like $200 for Christmas or something ridiculous.
Yeah, it's
like going to
be
that.
Cheap.
So go and pick
it
up.
It's a very good system.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing about the X, the S did this too. No stupid ass power brick.
Yeah.
And it's pretty small.
It's great.
And it has the new model controller with the aux jack in it, which I didn't have
That's
before.
Cool.
So it comes with a great controller.
Yeah.
No power brick. That power brick is like 11
giant.
Pounds.
It's humongous. Yeah.
I can't even.
It doesn't need
what
to be.
What world
that
did we live in where that was. Where that was needed.
We were making fun of it for like years. We were like, why is Xbox still putting a power brick on this thing? Like, everybody else had been like, oh, we figured it out. And Microsoft was like, I don't know how.
Yeah.
This is tough.
We need an outside generator inside this thing to power it. Yeah. I think we're done.
What?
I think that was it. We went almost 50 minutes, which
a great in-person podcast we did.
It was fun, man. I'm glad we got a chance to do it. I was like, we're not going to just hang out. I'm bringing my recording equipment.
You brought it to dinner the other night. I was like, there's no way we're recording at dinner.
I was like, hey, it's a rare opportunity. So I don't think we have any shows coming up. Maybe PAX East will probably be the next one.
No, PAX Unplugged.
Yeah, you're going to PAX Unplugged.
Yeah.
My wife's going.
Your wife's going.
My wife's
and
going.
And my wife's going.
Yeah, so I get to stay home with the baby. Have fun.
We'll do.
Yeah.
We're going to Philly. Going to play some board games.
Maybe I'll send my recording stuff up there.
Yeah.
And then you guys can do
we'll
a
talk.
Podcast.
We'll That'll talk and do some stuff. So if you're going to be at PAX Unplugged, look for me and two sisters that look similar.
Yes.
And we'll be walking around playing games and nerding out for a couple days.
Definitely go say hi at PAX Unplugged. And then East is in March or April next year.
I'll be at East for sure. Hopefully we'll make or West, whatever they call it now, again.
I hope so.
Because, you know. We gotta go.
Scott's
visit,
out there
go
now.
Scotty pants.
I asked Scott, I'm like, so are you going to PAX West this year?
Lord.
He's like, oh no, we'll see. I'm like, dude, it's right up the street from you. What do you mean I don't know we'll see? Get your ass down the road, man. What are you doing? Scott.
All right. Scott.
That guy.
So
anyway, you guys can follow us on Twitter at NerdAppropriate. Thanks for following us there. We appreciate it. You can go to our Facebook page, which is /NerdAppropriate on Facebook, Instagram/NerdAppropriate. You can email us directly, and that is nerds@nerdappropriate.com. Send us any questions, comments, or concerns to that website as well. And we'll do our best to have more episodes this month. It's hard. We're traveling a lot, and obviously stuff's going on. But we'll do our best to get stuff out there. And thank you for your patience, and we will talk to you soon.
Yeah, bye.
Bye.
Bruitage.tv Bruitage.tv. Bruitage.tv. Bruitage.tv.